So today we're going to talk about copyright law. Now, what is the problem for a halachist when we deal with copyright law? Very simply.
Doesn't exist.
They didn't have mass production in the times they come
out. Well, both of those are true, right? It doesn't exist, partially because of what you just said. which is, it is sort of an idea that comes out after printing. Probably as a result of that, until recently, right? What did people call what we would call violation of a copyright or plagiarism? A compliment, right? I mean, traditionally, right? It was a compliment, right? There was no such thing. It was a good thing, right? You think about it. The Ritva, 80% of the Ritva is the Rashba, which is 80% the Ramban, right? And they're most of no fech mishalhem, but it's not like they say, "Oh, I ain't in the Ramban, and this is my 2 cents," right? They literally rephrase the Ramban plus add their 2 cents. Right? Why? The Ritva does the same to the Ramban and the Ra. Fine. Why? Because in an age without printing, what's the best compliment? The best compliment is to copy. I like your work. I'm a Talmud of yours. I'm going to incorporate. If I'm writing a commentary in the Gemara, all I have to add is my 2 cents to what the Ramban already said. And that's a deep compliment. Right? That doesn't fly in academia nowadays. Right? That doesn't fly in anything nowadays. Yeah, Yaakov.
Like, it's a compliment as far as you say, "My Rebbe so and so said this, and this is what I have to say about it." But if you don't,
but the Ritva and the Rashba don't, usually, right? The Ritva and the Rashba, it's not like they systematically say, sometimes they say they caught because of a Rav, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just incorporate it as their own shot. Right? And this is true of a lot of things. You know, you think about a lot of the philosophers. Forget, and we can talk Jewish philosophers, right? How many people just basically copy it out of the Rambam? Right? They add their 2 cents, but they copy out of the Rambam, right? They basically agree with the Rambam. And this is not taken as a violation of the Rambam's rights to his work. You know, lehefech. It's taken as a expression of the strength of the Maimonidean position and the Maimonidean controversies. The reason we call it the Maimonidean controversy for 200 years is because it literally is the controversy over Shitas HaRambam, Udi Ime, for a long period of time.
It may also be that that there's an assumption that you know, if you're reading Ritva, you know the Ramban, so you
might
need the...
I'm saying it might. There are a whole bunch of technical reasons, but whatever the case may be, right, pretty much ain't davar kaze as you know, copyright law doesn't make sense in a pre-printing era, in an era when people, the norm is to copy and just add a little bit, rephrase or whatever. That's pretty much the norm. And you don't encounter a notion of copyright until, you know, the last few hundred years. Then, pitaum, you have printing, and not only do you have printing, but then you have, you know, with printing comes a lot of wonderful things like forgeries and stealing of other people's works in order to make money. All types of wonderful things that came with mass printing. And internationally, laws begin to develop, which we would call copyright law. So this is a problem that faced Poskim when it first came up. What to do with it, right? What do you do when basically an entire new category is created? And what do you do? How does halacha react to it? So what options do we have? Right?
Either intellectual property constitutes property, and therefore we can treat it like normal property as much as we can, or it does not constitute property, in which case it's over. There are no copyright rules.
Right, so the first choice that we're going to have to we would have to figure out is, does halacha recognize this type of property or not? Now, if we were trying to figure out that question, so what type of sources are you going to look in? So you have different options. One place to look is? It's Torah, right? Now, what effect should the fact that the world recognizes copyright law have on halacha?
What do you think about the Zinite issue?
So, you might think that it has an effect insofar as we co-opt their system into ours via Dina Malchusadina. Right, that's one possibility, which is to say, really, really, halacha doesn't recognize copyright law, but secular law does, and halacha recognizes secular law, mimela, we recognize copyright law. Alternatively, you say,
because it's a new invention, so the Torah didn't address it, but haraya, that this stuff exists.
Right, or you say, right, there is no precedent for it, or no obvious precedent for it, but since international law internationally this law is becoming recognized, that indicates something, and we should look back and figure out halachic category. And what's the third possibility?
It's not.
To ignore it, right? Don't make a claim about the nature of halacha fundamentally. Don't make a claim sort of parenthetically, accidentally, via Dina Malchusadina. Just deny the existence of intellectual property. Deny the rights that go behind copyright law. So those are the options that you have. Right? When you're faced with a reality that didn't exist, right? You have to. Those are the possibilities you have on the table. So, what I want to do is simply, as a test case, I want to examine three tshuvot and one not tshuva. I want to analyze the Sholem Meshev, Rav Nathanson, Rav Beis Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes, Igros Moshe, and the fourth, which is not a tshuva, because as far as I know, it's not in print, unless it's in the new Tshuvos Minchas Asher, but I haven't looked through it, but was Rav Asher Weiss's suggestion that I heard orally from him, in how halacha to recognize it. Okay? So first tshuva. Sholem Eshev is going to recognize copyright law, and I'm going to give you the heads up, right? He's going to recognize copyright law because of its place in secular law. That's going to affect how he understands halacha in a fundamental way. Okay, he's going to allow the fact that copyright law exists to affect his very formulation of halacha itself. Is that my phone? No. Okay. V'derech aga. Esmoch ba'zeh ma'ashikazim odot haskamot u'gzeirot shegozrin ha'rabanim ha'atvasot u'matvisim partzim ba. Let me talk about haskamos. Because haskamos, right, about the same time, a little bit after, the printing press came around, it became a big thing to have haskamos. And one of the things that haskamos were understood to be was a form of copyright protection. That a haskama included within it a chirim against people who would illegitimately copy other people's works. Right? This was how it began to be understood.
I think the first copyright, I once heard historically that we have record of, is Salome Rossi, who was an Italian Jewish composer. So he got Haskamos, that the man literally said, you can't copy this stuff. And that was the first copyright that we're aware of.
It could be. I have never heard that, but to be fair, I haven't done a study that much into it. I'd have to look it up. It's possible. Rossi is, I'm trying to remember what year he is. 16th
century.
What?
I think he's 16th.
16th. I think so. Okay. So he says, V'amarti leva er v'echtov v'zeh ma'she ishafti l'arav ha'charev Moreno of Shmuel Waldberg. Nero Yair, Av Bezdin, Kila, Kidosha, Zalklau, V'akrai, V'yom echad v'yishlach, This is what he wrote. Mechtava Giani, your letter got to me. Vasher pasak b'davar asher tava something. Matpis milivov et Rabbi Yosef Hirsch Balaban b'davar had pasal shulchan aruch yoredei amim privagadim v'chavos das upeschei tshuva shematpis Rabbi Tzvi shelo yuchal Rabbi whoever vimcho. V'adaz ha'pizchei tshuva talui b'im Rabbi Yosef Tzvi yesh lo hormuna ma b'dina de malchusa as de dina malchusa dina v'im lo la. So the question you had was whether one printer could basically copy the Shulchan Aruch that another printer had made, right? A nice fancy Shulchan Aruch, not like the original Shulchan Aruch, which just had Shulchan Aruch Ramah.
What year is this?
He is
1800s.
It's 1800s, yeah.
Could Rav Aleph Yud be like Rav Kook?
No. But I think, yeah, he's 1800s. I forget exactly when in the century he is, but okay. So you said that basically what it depends on is whether he has whatever, copyright protection or the equivalent, whatever it was exactly, from the government. Because then we'll apply the rules of Dina Malchus Dina, and if not, not. Uvaka eit levayer tamo. Now you want to explain. V'hinei achel dazbechei juvashatan, Rebbe, whatever his name is, shekon haschos me'es ha-mechaber, v'azeh heishiv ma'alaso, shema mocha rishon l'sheni, kol schos sheyavol yado. So you said, look, when the printer bought this from the other person, what did he buy? He bought it, and he bought all the zchuyot that come with it. V'kana mechaber atzmo ein lo koach uzchut bazem me'achar shabat bazar rishona shnat tavkut zanivad lo nizkar shum isur. And so once the original author, or the original person who put it together, gave it to the printer, so after the first printer, and there was no isur written into the original printing, so now you can't go back and change it. And if there had been in the original printing a statement like no one else can print this for 15 years or something like that, so we can talk about it. But if you didn't, right? If in the original printing there was no such clause put in, so then there's no iser. And he said, look, there's a tshuva about the Rama of some, but it's not relevant here, because here you're talking about where someone already sold the Svarim, and now, right, for him to come back and try to get rights after he's already sold it, that doesn't work. And you said, besides, even if he had some rights to it, this is a different book. This is the big version, that was the pocket version. Said, you said people aren't gonna, who already have the small one, aren't gonna buy the big one just because it has the Pitzkei Tshuva. Below Bari Hazika, and therefore it's not clear that there was damage done. And because the seller already gave the rights over the pre-race, sold the books, and therefore gave over the rights to the printer. Okay, so the questioner who sent the Shaila to the Sholem Aishiv basically said that if this person doesn't actually have protection from the government, and he didn't specifically, you know, set up whatever it was, a cherem in the original version, and he didn't originally limit the rights that he gave when he first printed the book, so then there's no, then the original author has no rights to the book anymore, right? He sold the book to the printer, he didn't specifically limit what rights the printer would have, there was no cherem, there was no copyright law, there was no nothing, that's it, it's done. Right? If you didn't explicitly get recognition from the government, you didn't explicitly set up some sort of neder cherem or some limitation in the original sale, so then you have no rights. Okay? Yeah.
According to that, a sequel that he hasn't created yet, but it's definitely related to the first book that he's.
So he has full rights to it.
Which one? Who has full rights to it?
The author.
Why? He sold everything, you know.
Yeah, but he hasn't written it yet. In a modern American law, this is true also, right? If I, you know what I'm saying? For example, right? If I publish a book with, you know, one day I publish a book with whatever printing press, right? And then I decide I want to print the book again. So if I want to print the book exactly as is, I have to go with my original. Under normal laws, I have to go with my original printer. What do I do if I want to print the book with a different printer?
I change the cover,
I change a footnote here and there, and I put a new forward in, and I call it second edition. That is perfectly legal, right? Right? I just can't call it the first edition, I call it the second edition, right? The second edition of my book on something, right? It's very simple, right? That's always, or the 20th anniversary edition, or something
so
like that,
saying
right?
That's okay, what? It sounds like he's saying that something like that wouldn't be okay.
So the person in question That was one of his arguments, is like, this is not really the same book, it's the second edition, right? I printed basically the same book, but a little bigger, added the Piskei Tshuva, it doesn't look exactly the same. In American law, that's perfectly legal. And he's assuming that this is perfectly fine, because, right, you changed it a little bit, and you didn't get government protection, and you didn't specifically assert it, and whatever, whatever, you have no rights, Matthew. Okay. So let's see what Rishon Meshiv does to this. And he says, V'hine, kol dvarav tmuim. What you said is astonishing. What are you talking about? If someone publishes a book, a new book, so of course he has rights to it. That's obvious. Forever. In my pisim or mechadshim, ezem alacha, ainu rishay acher lasot below reshuto. And even and if you're going to, you know, print it again in a slightly new way or whatever it is, still you need his permission. Varein no dash or we Avram Yaakov may harov shub. I don't know what that is exactly. Shasa hacheshbon be machine kol yamav. Kibel scharo mehakira bivarsha v'lo yitarash lema shelanu kisicha b'teila shelahem v'zed davar shaseichel machisho u'maisim b'chol yom shemat b'chibur yesh lo ule I think it's something like that. That should be his heirs, but I don't know what it stands for. Schut. And so what does he say? Obviously an author has rights to his work because... What's the argument?
In Warsaw, they give him money for it. As an
government... The government does it, right? The Polish government does it. They recognize copyright law. They recognize authors' rights. They recognize inventors, right? They recognize whatever. I'll prove to you, because that person who used the machine, whatever machine, right? And he had rights for his whole days, and, you know, he got royalties, and his kids would get royalties, and whatever exactly the laws were. But now, he could have made the argument, therefore, Dina Lachos Dina, but he didn't. What argument does he make? Lo te Tara Shalanu Kasicha Batela Shalahem, which means yeah, if they recognize that this is a right that somebody has, there are creators' rights, there are inventors' rights, there are authors' rights, so we obviously have to recognize it, right? Before he even tries to justify it halakhically, right? His assertion is that it must be true because, right, if they recognize that right, that that's the right thing to do, that's the moral thing to do, vaday, 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 the Torah also does. Because our Torah can't be less moral, less careful about people's rights than secular law, lo Allah, al dash from Adam, that could be the case. Matthew.
Is that a truth claim or a Chil Hashem claim?
So I think this is a, right, this is a, I think this is a truth claim. I mean, he could have said, Chil Hashem. He didn't, right? He said, Lotei Torah Shalom Kisich Chil Hashem, which means, yeah. Right, I mean, what does that mean? Right, it's similar to the expression of Gemara, right? Why do you care who that's quoted in the name of? Gemara says, should the Gemara write Zemorta Tehei? Right, Zemir Zemorta Shehei? Should it be a song? Right, and it tells you that it can't be true, right? That you can't just ignore it. I think it's a truth claim, right? I think so. Right now,
let's make sure that our Torah isn't any less than their Sikha B'Tela. We want to make sure that we're clear with the Sikha
B'Tela. It doesn't sound that way. I mean, normally the argument of Lo Te Torah Shalanu Kesicha De'el Shalahem is a...
that we're learning from that.
Yeah, I mean, you read it, look, Shaseicha Machishel, I think, right, the next words is because logic contradicts that. Right, it doesn't sound like a Chil Hashem claim. You could have made a Chil Hashem claim. It's pretty clear he's not. He's saying, it can't be, right? Haseichel machisho, that in general, that's how the phrase is used, but I think it's clear that that's how he's using it. He said, v'zei z'shvot ha-matpis mei halberstadt ratzal latpis yama talmud u something shenit v'shal rishayon mimeni u migisi Hagaon Eru Yair Vim Yomar Shisham Lo Muskar Zman Mugbal Hinei Betzlach Shem Nitzbaz Bezel Kali Eru Bishlomo Rabin Shtayin Nitzbaz Shem Shem Nitzbaz Bar Shad Bnei Hagaon Hatzlach Varei Shem Lo Gazru Yisur Klal Hilachi Lochavat Lad Peace Bilti Rishut Shehu Yisur Gamor. And he said, for example, this sefer that I wanted to print and that he wanted to print, they asked our Rishus, even if it wasn't written in, that they you needed to ask Rishus, they did, and if you look in the publishing of the Tzlach, you'll see that it says that the children were asked after his death whether they could publish it. Uvda, this is what people are doing, even in our world. Uma shenimtza b'svarim shamechaber matpis v'gozrim ad zman mugbal. And that which it says in the svarim, that the author is printing it and he goes there, that until such and such a time, you aren't allowed to print it. Love mishum she'ein lo koach alamit. Now this is already a chiddush. So the reason you write in it, I have 15 years. I have author's rights for 15 years, 17 years, whatever it is. That's not because he doesn't have eternal rights. Zeino. Dibishilo adam rashai ligzor shilo yet piso alamit. Bilti rishuto. Because you're allowed to say, I'm writing this and you can't reprint my book forever without my permission. Right? Bilti rishuto. Oh, do we know what this is? Beis chaf. It definitely means heirs. Bnei something. Or maybe it's supposed to be beis bnei beit. I don't know. Whatever it is, his children. Raksha adarava hamechaber ba'atzmo rotzeh she'ad b'svarav achar she'iske limkor svarav. Why do people want? Why do people put a limit on how many years they have rights to their books normally? He asserts, why? Because people want their books to be known. First they want to make their money. At some point you've made almost all the money you're going to make. Because after 15 years, who remembers the book anyways? So halavai that in 150 years, people should still be printing my books. I don't need the money after I'm dead. I don't need the money after I've made my money. But I do need the fame. Right, I do need the recognition. Sifsosos dovos bakever. I want people to be telling my Torah forever. You know, I'll put a clause in my first book of Tshuvos that for the first 10 years, no one's allowed to put it on Bar Ilan, and then after that, they can put it on Bar Ilan, so everyone can see my gonus in every Tshuva that I write. Right, that's essentially the argument here. Right, is he said, look, it's not that right people don't fundamentally have the right to their work for their entire life. They do. Elomai. People in general are balancing different desires. On the one hand, they want to make money. On the other hand, they want to be famous. So they make a pshara. First I'll be rich, then I'll be famous. Right? That's their basically the cheshbon. Right? They want their words to spread to the whole world. But let's say you're so convinced that I have the world's best book, and even if I don't give you the rights, you're going to buy it from me anyways. Right? You wrote the Pischei Tshuva. And anyone who knows anything about Shulchan Aruch, right? You need the Pischei Tshuva. The Pischei Tshuva is awesome. Pischei Tshuva's Bekiyas was astounding. And he did what, first of all, he knew all the Tshuvos. Second of all, he did the amazing thing of summarizing all the Tshuvos and finding the one important line in a good 100 important Tshuva Svarim or more, I have no idea. The Orach called Shulchan Aruch. Not everyone knows it's on all Shulchan Aruch, but it is. You look online, you'll find it's on Aruch Chaim. We have it on Yaradei. We have it on Choshen Mishpat. I think we have it on Ezer. It's like the Otsar Poskim, right? The Otsar Poskim. 500,000 Tshuvos summarized al pi Seder Even Ezer. So if you're convinced that the whole world is going to buy that Sefer, so then, if you really wanted to, so fine. So you are allowed to limit people's rights forever. And that which you'll say that he didn't write in Isser. He nay afim loya cause of Isser. And now, what does he do? Right now, what does he do after half a paragraph of waxing on about why it must be true that someone has rights forever if he wants them? Now he comes up with the halachic category to justify his intuition, which is Hazak Gvul, which is if, in fact, the way people make money is by selling their books and holding on to the rights to those books and the right to print it in the future by you printing it without his permission. It's Hasagas Gvul. You are entering into his Dalet Amos. You are impinging on his Parnassa, and that is Usur. But you see, right? What did he do first? First, he looked at the reality, and he said intuitively, what is the reality? What does the legal situation tell me must be the conclusion? And he is explicit about the fact that what really is driving him is the conviction that lo tehei Torah shalom kesicha b'tei l'shelahem. Only after he's laid out for you his conviction that that which is true in the secular world must be true in Torah, if it makes sense, right? Not obviously not everything, but if there's a svara, there's a higayon, there's a moral claim that pulses through the secular law that it must be true in Torah, then he comes up with a halachic category. And then he goes on, Aval, Be'emet, Bimdina Rusya, Isra, Becherim, Vekonam, Asr Lahaskir, Velo Yishama, Alpino, Kimitanim, Shalai, Koch, Bedam, Lixar, but we can't actually write a cherim into it in Russia because the government won't let us. Avlavakesh, Mahaita, Lenemar, Shum Isser, and therefore we don't actually write the Isser into the Akdam of Agamim, and Hosenu, Yesh, Chok, Bat, Basam, Bilila, Hadpis, and besides, we don't need to set up a cheirum because there is copyright law. There are laws that, by the government that protect it. Umakach based in Yafe, Kiyim Yasu, Derech Bakasha. And right, he uses this as a sort of a rhetorical flourish. Right, what is the strength of Bez Din worth? We can only basically request, but we can't actually ask it. We don't have power. Vaaf and Nimtali Famim, Gzera Vachirem. And even if you find a chirim, so the government doesn't really get involved, and if people start complaining, then they'll get punished. And therefore, we don't set up a gzeira. But in some shasas, you really find it that they ossered anyone republishing it. And midin Torah, you're not allowed to hasag gvul. Masha kozim halasu od shegam below. And then you said, well, even if there is such a thing, it shouldn't be true from country to country. You should only have rights in your own country. Hagon Bashus Yaakov at Basas Shas Bivien, Shnatov Tavkov Sadivav, Shemedina Lamedina, Ein Rishus, Visham Tam Borer, Visham Shainafshur, Lahavi Medina Lamedina, Vitzad Isser, Shechaka Akira. He said the reason you find in this Gemara a local ban and not a universal ban is not because you don't have international rights over your work. It's because there was a law that you weren't allowed to bring merchandise from one country to the other, so it was irrelevant. Okay, we don't have to read through the whole tshuva. Right, let's stop there. He's a very, very dense writer, yeah.
So maybe I didn't understand this correctly, but when first he discusses his conviction, so he says that the chaber of the book has a schut to it. He actually is intellectual property. Then when he brings that other argument, he doesn't try to justify intellectual property, but rather says, "Rabbi Sagar Skula," as in, "I'm keeping you from making money which you're entitled to." So
yeah.
The two arguments are in fact different.
Yes, meaning he doesn't make right. That it's a good point, right? Meaning his conviction that you must have rights to your property, he doesn't actually come up with a svara for. He just is convinced that it is right because if the world recognizes it, it must be true. And then he comes up with the halakhic categories. Once there's a recognition of people's rights to their property, then me impinging on your work by reprinting it without you getting royalties, I also impinge on your right to make money, and that's a sucker's ghoul. Right? I mean, I'm not sure how disconnected. They're slightly different.
But he won't call Gzela.
He won't call Gzela. Right. Right? Meaning it's clear that he's not... He doesn't think... Right, we should... I probably should have elaborated on this before. Right? Why is it that it's very hard to pin down a halakhic category is because what's the problem with... We'll call it for a moment intellectual property.
It's intellectual.
Right? Is classic Gzela is... Ein Gzela, Ella... Ella Kain Vayigzol... Yeah, exactly, right? Is the only type of Gzela that we have is, right, classically, is physical stealing of object. This is mine, you take it, you steal it, you run away. Right? That is Gzela. Intellectual property, Kanir Eh, there's no Chefza. Right? Because, obviously, if I took the book that you wrote, and I stole it, so I have to return it. But I'm not, I'm taking a copy of your book, which I own, and now I'm copying it. Right, so what am I stealing from you? The right to print more. Or not the right to print more. I'm usurping your exclusive ability to print your Sefer by printing it. But I'm not actually stealing your book. I'm stealing the ideas that are in your book, or even the words that are in your book, and I'm putting them in another piece of paper. Right, it was like I was having a back and forth with Mayor Hirsch. Hi, Mayor, if you're listening. Where... He asked me why there's no Isser of Maisa Shabbos if a Jew, knowing it was Shabbos, wrote a book. And now I want to read the book. So I told him that there's a whole bunch of reasons why it's not a problem. But one of the obvious reasons that it's not a problem is because you're not reading the book. Right? You're not reading the original book. Right? Because even if you want to say, oh, now people are Tinoch Shanishbas, so it's Shogeg, and we Paskin Shogeg, and Mutterlach Har Shabbos, and whatever. Spinoza was a Gantz Rosh, Michal Shabbos Farhesia, he was in Chirim. So if you think it's Mutter read Spinoza Mitzad Kvira, assuming we can cross this, we can cross that problem, we can get over that hill, right? Why are you allowed to read Spinoza? He probably wrote it Dafka on Shabbos just to spite you. Right? Oh, it's amazing. He probably even had in mind that it was for you. Because, any future Jew who reads it, I wrote it for you, so you will go off the derech. Right? I don't know if I actually think that about Spinoza, but Nanayach, you thought that about Spinoza. So why can you read Spinoza?
Is it not from the Maisa that he...
Right, so there's 100 reasons, but the most obvious reason is, even if you wanted to talk about it, so Yesh Ladon, if you could read his original notes... But you're not reading his original notes. They took whatever he wrote, they turned it, they printed it, and then they copied it, and then somebody, 50 years ago put it on a computer and fixed it up and put some and made, checked the grammar and made some changes and made some footnotes and put an academic edition of it. Now, you're reading the 7,000th version of this and a copy of that at that. Like, of course you're allowed to read it. Ma kesher between this and Spinoza. At some level, right, that's the problem with intellectual property, is that this is not what you wrote. I mean, it is. The ideas are, but you don't own the ideas, do you? Right? And what he's asserting is, well, yes, you do. How do you know you own ideas? Because everyone recognizes you own ideas. In fact, of course you own ideas. What's worth more money? Right? The desk that I built with my expert carpentry. Okay. Nanayach, I could do such a thing. This is not possible. The desk that my father-in-law built with his expert carpentry, this is very plausible. Right? Which is worth, I don't know, say a very nice desk, a few hundred dollars. Fine. Or a little idea by a person named Steve Jobs. Which one's worth more money? Lemaisa, it's obvious which one's worth more money, but it's hard to fit that into the classic halachic categories. But the argument of the Shalom Eishev is too bad. Obviously, right, there's an intuitive reason that the whole world recognizes that Steve Jobs' ideas are worth a heck of a lot of money, and therefore they must be recognized as his. What's the category? I don't know. But if everyone recognizes that you have the right to recognize money, to recognize these ideas as his legitimate property, and that he's allowed to use to get money. So mimeila tzasakas gvul. Right, so he found a halacha category. Once it's already recognized, so then it's a tzasakas gvul. But you're right, he doesn't justify why this is property. He doesn't try to find a category to figure out this is formal gzela. He just says it must be usher. I don't know why, but it is. And then he comes up with a tzasakas gvul, which practically explains why it's usher to do it. Okay.
There's just like one problem that he just doesn't deal with at all, and that's the fact that with the table, right, because of the principle in science where if you break it up and put it into little wood chops and steal it, you're still stealing the actual,
No, that's obviously part of the problem is that there's no conservation. It's the same problem. I'm saying it's the same problem. There's no... The fact that there's no conservation,
for the
fact that the rules,
no
of course, no, the fact that the rules of the conservation of matter and energy don't apply to ideas, right, is indicative of the same point, right? That it's not like tachlis, it's not physical in the way that the shtender is. This very expensive shtender.
But because of that, you can make the opposite argument of the Shoal of Nations. Say Dafka has to be like Rishon HaRabim, Midoraita, everything, because how do you know that it's your idea? It could be the guy in France and he just didn't have the access to publish the idea, and you're actually stealing his idea. And therefore it should
And what would the Shoal of Nations answer to that?
He would say that it's not a, it's, but that just...
What would the Shoal of Nechem answer that?
He would say that it's because that's how the Goyim do it.
Yeah, he's like...
But then that just proves the point that all he cares about is really Dina de Malchut Adina.
No, it's not Dina de Malchut Adina. Is that the whole world... It's Afka not. No, he doesn't. It's not about Dina de Malchut Adina. What's the nafkamin of Dina de Malchut Adina? Whether this is a question of Dina de Malchut Adina or not Dina de Malchut Adina.
What happens if you transgress it
and the authorities find out,
then would you be punished for that by law?
No, I mean you would, but...
Because it's
right, so first of all, not all laws are under Din Malchus Adina, but another question. This is not... Let's say you're out of the government's jurisdiction. Right? What's he talking about? Think about the reality he's describing here. Is that we live in a Malchus Shel Chesed, sort of. We're like, people, yes, there's copyright law, but internal Jewish matters, sometimes they'll get involved, sometimes they won't. Right? So, you also have, right, in a lot of these governments, there was quasi-Jewish autonomy, so maybe you weren't under direct jurisdiction from the government. Or, when you're building the Jewish state, well, if we want to set up Jewish law, in theory, so will we recognize copyright law? Will we recognize intellectual property, or we won't? And he would say, of course you will.
That's right.
Right? Meaning, it's not just a practical issue. Meaning, it's not just a practical issue that in America, in England, in Australia, you have to respect intellectual property. He's saying fundamentally the fact that all these countries respect intellectual property means that we should also. Which means that if we reinstituted the Sanhedrin and you couldn't find a halakha category, you would come up with a halakha category, you would invent one.
But his sicha b'teila is that argument just proves to be, you could make the argument if we get to a utopianistic state of in this state where everyone's learning a lot of Torah and everyone's producing a lot of Kiddushim, and there's no real reason to keep on printing Sfarim or whatever because everyone's coming up with the same ideas.
Means if they recognize it, we have to recognize it. It must be that we recognize it.
Why would we recognize it?
Because they're right. Because they're right.
But that's
exactly his point.
I understand.
They are right.
Where he was.
No, that's not the argument he's making. He's saying, they're right. To say otherwise doesn't make sense. Our moral intuition, our intuition of justice, accords with secular law. And therefore we recognize it. Right? Meaning, it's not practical. This is not, like I said, it's not a Chilul Hashem argument. It's not, they recognize it, so mimeila we have to recognize it. Right? And practically, here, it's Dina Machusa. No! It's, if the whole world recognizes intellectual property, so do we. And remember, he's not just talking about Svarim. Here he's talking about Svarim, but he's talking about the same argument. Is Svarim, is technology, is, right? The same thing is true of copyright law, that's true of patent law. The same thing that's true of Chidushei Torah, that's true of iPods and laptops and all the things that make millions of dollars for people in Alon Shvut and everywhere else in Israel, that, you know, all these high-tech companies that they're selling for $50 million, $100 million, $150 million to random American companies that buy them off of them, you know? Like, right? Why in a utopian world would that not exist? Right? I mean, a mamish utopian world where everybody in their spare time could invent everything for themselves and have the means. But that does not how the world works. Definitely not in a capitalistic industrial world.
Right, I'm saying specifically like ideas, not a...
I'm thinking those are also ideas. Those are just ideas. In the end of the day...
They're selling the development of those ideas, which is already different.
That's not true.
They just sold the idea.
Lavdavka, what is the patent? A patent is the idea, right? You have to give an idea that you know how to build it,
but all
right?
These high-tech companies are all after the post-development.
Okay, but that's not what a patent is.
100%.
It's the same idea.
100%. I'm saying the ideas themselves. The ideas themselves. The development of those ideas I'm not talking about.
But that's exactly what secular law recognizes, that ideas themselves, right, are powerful and are money makers, right? That's what they recognize. The idea themselves, right? Yeah, the idea themselves.
I'm agreeing with that.
Okay, and that's what he argues.
But the idea itself in a utopian world, people will have
no, but
just as a matter of how to develop or the.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's what he says, and I don't think that secular law will ever get to that point where they don't recognize patents. Right? I mean, patents are like the ABCs now of law, right? And a patent is just an idea in the end of the day. Now, the Beis Yitzchak, on the other hand, says not this way. The Beis Yitzchak next Tshuva says, for some reason they still don't have it on Bar Ilan, so I had to give you the PDF here. Hashela mi sheheniach kisvei chudushei Torah. Im mutter la'acher la'atik mehem la'atpisam shalom rishis ha'yorshim. Af im ta'atik b'chayim echaber, o yesh bo mishum gezel. Tshuva. Hine, kama terazo dimas chuz ha'ad pasa l'tovad hana'a. So the questioner here attempted another category called tovas hana'a. Right, what's tovas hana'a?
The entitlement to
money, which might or might not have monetary value, right? The fact that I can give truma to whichever kohen I want might have monetary value. The ability to choose. Obviously, I don't own the truma, I'm not a kohen, but the fact that I could give it to whoever I want is itself monetary value. And then, or maybe not. So you try to say it's tovas hana. Devor b'simen reish ayin vav berama, the tovas hana, ikav yerusha. Ufi divrei hashach, im hadavar biyad ha-yorshim, zachu ha-yorshim. Vigam tovas hana b'yerusha, vehevi divrei ha-ksos ha-choshen, chu machlokes bein ha-shalah v'ha-shach. V'hu ha-din ha-cha, ha-ksavim biyad ha-yorshim, talya v'machlokes, vil ulevavi lo kein idameh. I think that doesn't make sense, right? Levine's idea, that comparison makes no sense. Darei ha-ksavim, heima mamish shal ha-yorshim. That which is the actual things that are written down, the chidushim, belong to the yorshim. This is not tovas hana, right? The actual words belong to the yorshim. And if they don't want you to copy it, so they can tell you you can't, right? That's theft, right? To take the manuscript is theft. That's vadai. Alkein ena savig rak im hetika ktavim shel bidat yorshim o b'chayim achaber umutal bizam. The question that you're really asking is not whether I could steal the originals to copy them. That obviously you can't. That's theft. Is if they're already copied, eichshu, can I now reprint them? And he's coming back to Berko's point. He said, at first glance, what would I say? It's mutter. Why? Let's say I went to the shir where the chidushim were said, and I published my notes. Lidugma. Let's call it the Rishimot Shiurim of Rabbi Reichman. Naniach the Shiurei Hagrid by Rav Shechter. Let's call it Shiurim Lezecha Abimari. Or the Shiurim on Stam. Or the Shiurim on Krisos. Or, and the list goes on. Or the Kudrusi Shiurim. Or the Kovid Shiurim. Or the Evan Azel, right? It's a write-up of his shirim, right? He wrote it up, but still, right? This is what Moshe mentioned. Or Shirei Haral, or, and the list goes on and on and on. He said, is that mutter? Vadai, that's mutter, right? If someone, gives a lecture, if you wanted to take the notes from this shir and post them on Facebook, I have no rights to them, right? Lichora, right? If I wrote it up and I put it somewhere which is protected by copyright, okay. But if you, you know, especially if you give attribution, right? You say at the beginning, these are the chidushim that I heard from such and such, right? So then, right? Why should I be asir? Shalom and lo. Hachi ain mutar la'acherim la'farsem chidushi darash shalom b'shem amro. Is it not mutar for me to tell over the Torah, at least if I tell you who I got it from? And even if I then go out and give the share to 10,000 people, maze mishonen. Vilama imra abiksavim lo yuchol lefarsem b'shem amro leman shmaitza v'arim alma. And why can't I do the same thing to chidushim? I could read the chidushim, and I could memorize them and copy them and print them. Or I could take a copy of the chidushim and print them and copy them. What's the difference? Ach yesh lechalik. But you could distinguish and say, "Dikish shama mimenu baal peh." If you heard it baal peh, imlo amar lo bival yomar. If I didn't tell you, don't say it over. Hare lo hikbid. So that shows that I'm not makbid if you repeat my chidushim. Yomar lacher. Im amar lo bival yomar. And if I did tell you, this shir is private. You're not allowed to say it to anybody else. And you think I'm putting it in YU Torah. That's not true. Right? Don't ignore the recorder on the shtender. It doesn't exist. Vaday asur. So then it would be asur, lomar lachirim, to tell other people, da Torah v'achidush dileihu, because I own my chidush Torah. And you could say, I wanted to say it myself. But I didn't tell you, don't say. So you're allowed to teach it to others. You're doing a mitzvah. But manuscripts, maybe you'd say, because there you could say, look, if he gave you explicit permission to copy it and didn't tell you, this is only for you and for no one else, so then it's fine. And then maybe you're allowed to print it. But if you copied it without the author knowing, oh, without the yorshim, yeshless topic. You, right? Unclear. Whether your Ramah says that if I borrow books from you, I'm allowed to open them up and copy down notes for myself. Because why else did you lend me books? Etc. Amnam. Right, so he goes on here. But then I skipped a few sections. Right, so first he attempts to suggest that maybe there should be a difference, and he says, well, that's only again if you stole them, but if you made the original copy with Birisha, so it should be no problem. But now look at the next paragraph. Now, mitzad dina de malchusa aser. But even though fundamentally it must be mutter, mitzad dina malchusa it's aser. Aser b'dina seno lehadpis. The kavat razor shalom never become da dina malchusa dina ho which is razor the Torah. And you ask me why shouldn't it be dina malchusa dina because it contradicts the Torah. He said, so what? He said, Matzil is Mizuto Shalyam, right? Zuto Shalyam, the Torah says, you don't have to return it. Right? We talked about this yesterday with the rusher. If my phone is on the beach and the waves come and it drifts off to sea, and you find it, you can keep it halachically. I have no claim on it. Doesn't matter if I'm there, omed v'tzobech. It doesn't matter if I'm standing there and screaming and saying, I'm not misyayish, I'm not misyayish, I'm not misyayish. I know that my cell phone will find me. It'll come back to me. Doesn't matter. Right? The Torah was matir it. And yet, we pass in the Shulchan Aruch, the mitzad din l'malchus adina, if the law is that you have to return even Zuzo Shoyam, so you have to return Zuto Shalyam. Within Shiv Chavav, Mavur Desarch Lachser, Mikach Nimachos Dina, Dachi Nehige. Divisad Amichtav Chayv Lachser, Lufize, Yishlomer Huadin Bazeh, Shikvar Nasnu Shalol, Hadbis, Miyeras, Hamalchos, Chayv Lachzik, Bedina Malchusa.
Therefore, here too, even though Halacha doesn't recognize intellectual property as he already established, you have to keep it. Mitzad Dina Malchus Dina,
bishagam sheyish mamash davka mashu kneged vetor lahat bizmamon ayado de vetor betogav ava whatever shedin lahuza hu lahafsid menias harevach lo mikri hezekah krech mitad vetor lakaim din lahuzam haytam davin sarach lachzir. And he said, we could talk about whether there would be dina de machuza dina if it required you to lose money against halachic principles. That's not what it's doing here. It's limiting your revach. It's limiting your potential profit. That dina de machuza can definitely do. The kol shekain b'din zeh shekvar kasaj shagon milavav kasev shekain u'alpi de v'tara alken zarek lachzik b'din de machuz the dina de machuza. And he said this is the same as what the Chassam Sofer said, that any time there's an agreement amongst members of a profession, you're bound by Din Machusa. And here it's L'tovas HaMechabrim, it's for the good of the authors, you're bound. He said he was a tzaddik, right? The grandfather was of the Chassam Sofer. So he said, anyone who wants to publish my books, do it. I don't need the money. That's fine. He was both a tzaddik and he was wealthy. So for someone who's both a tzaddik and wealthy, it's not a big deal for him to say, anyone can copy my svarim. I don't care. But not everyone can do that. But now scholars are poor, and people make money from their books. But remember, if it weren't for Din Machusa, you would not be bound. There would be no such thing as intellectual property. But there is no nafkamina in our country because of Dina de Malchusa. Okay, so far two possibilities, right? Intellectual property doesn't exist classically in halacha. So, Beis Yitzchak says, in a Hanami, it doesn't exist in halacha. Lo matzanu devar kaseh, elamai. Doesn't matter. Halacha recognizes it because of Dina Malchusa Dina. Right? Well, that's one way of solving a problem, right? Secular law recognizes it. We don't have a natural category to fit it into. In fact, we have evidence that it probably doesn't fit a normal halacha category. Fine. Theoretical halacha doesn't recognize it. Practical halacha does, because Din Malchusa basically co-opts their laws into ours. The Sholem Aleichem says no. If their law recognizes it and it makes sense, it must be that our Torah also recognizes it. So Ekronit, he says, intellectual property is recognized in halacha, and that's all there is to it. Then he says, well, once you say that, and therefore we know that halacha recognizes your right to that which you created, even on the level of intellectual property, so mimeila it's asagas gvul. But his basic claim is, they recognize it, we recognize it. Yaakov and Matthew. Matthew.
In Dina de Machusa, would that mean that we need to, because Din Machusa, we need to follow their rules, so whatever their rules are for stealing or protecting intellectual property, to do that? Or is it Din Machusa recognizes intellectual property, hence we need to recognize intellectual property, but within the Hilchos of Halachah of Torah of what's stealing and what's ownership? As in, are we taking the concept from Din Machusa?
No, I mean, it's totally Din Machusa. I mean, Din Machusa means we follow their laws.
As could we say that the shilu between the two? As it's not that we learn from them that it's right, but that we're bound by their standards to consider this property, but then within Torah we consider property.
I mean, you could say that, but that's basically still Din Machusa. I mean, you could say that we say that all the time, right? Because this is Din Machusa, so Mimela would be Gneva if you violated this rule. Right? Because Din Machusa dictates that I have these rights, and if you then take it, so it's Gzela, but it's not intrinsic Gzela, it's that the law, or it's Masagvul, or it's whatever. But, I mean, that's classically, right? Meaning, for example, right? If standard rental laws, these are actual true laws, standard rental laws include 12-month period, so if I write a contract, we assume it's 12 months, and therefore you can't back out of it. It's illegitimate halachically and legally because this is the law. Mistama, you're acting according to the law. If you're acting according to law, so then the contract is written al das kol adam, And Aldas Kol Adam in this case reflects in Machuzas and Mela, that is the halacha, the Ikra halacha, right? In Dine Mamonos, there's always this problem, because since so much of Dine Mamonos is based on contracts, which is based on agreement, right, anything that shapes the type of agreement we make is Mimela going to be recognized halachically, even if its source was Dine Machuzas. Right? So Dine Machuzas is a little bit complicated that way. But his basic claim is that the only recognition of it is because we outsource the rules here, so to speak, to Dine Machuzas. Okay? Third tshuva by Rav Moshe, which is not going to say much chidushim, but let's read it, and then I want to suggest the last possibility. Misha osa tape midivei Torah v'oser lahatiko b'davar echad sh'asa tape midivei Torah v'kodav sh'oser lasus mitape shalo o tape v'alei oser ki u'inyan shvei kesef. He said, right, this is the same question of intellectual property, but this time by tapes, not by writing. And what does he say? It's shvei kesef, right? Meaning, practically, it is worth money. Now, if I give a shear and I don't tell people they aren't allowed to tape it, so then, mistama, they are allowed to tape it, and then they can do whatever they want with the recording. But if I tell you not, then I have the right to say that. And you have to respect that, because that means I want to make money off of it. I'm allowed to, because the tape that I'm making is shvei kesef. And even if you're going to tell me, it's Torah, and you have to be teach people Torah, still, whatever, I don't have to, you know, there are people I don't want to give it to. And sometimes I don't want the whole world to hear because I don't know if I'm right. Because maybe I don't want you to make tapes, so maybe I'll turn out that I thought I was wrong. Now I can't tell you can't tape for yourself. But I could tell them, don't publicize it. But if I actually make a tape, I put in effort to make a tape which I can sell, so then obviously I can tell you can't do it. But it's some other gzera, I don't know what it is. It's not gzera. Allah says tape echa mitape ech acher shalom rishosu iser gezel. So what does he say? If I steal your tape to make a tape, vada it's gezel. That obvious. I stole a ben object. If I copy your tape, right, and then I publish it, right, or I copy it, believe rishosu, so then what is it?
Something.
It's something. It's usher. It's not gezel, but it's usher.
That's similar to the shalmeshev.
It's like the shalmeshev, exactly.
It's not gezel, but it is inside a school.
Right, so it seems that, right, what he's saying is it's something like the shalmeshev, meaning Rav Moshe basically says it must be usher, I don't know why. Right? Meaning by saying it's shvei kesef, what is he recognizing? That obviously it's gezel because it's worth money. Why is it worth money? How is it gezel? I don't know, but it is. Right? It seems like the same as a Shol Meshiv, just in a shorter version. Yeah.
Just according to that argument, and also I guess the Shol Meshiv, would they only care about the government stance on it, or they care about people's stance on it? Because like people, the general like public might view, as a modern example, downloading movies as, you know, permissible.
So this is the big question that everyone asks nowadays is, what is the halachic or moral obligation of laws which are ignored. Right? This is basically the question that has been asked in terms of downloading music illegally, which is, if in fact it's true, without weighing in on whether it's true, if in fact it's true that people do this against the law en masse, and therefore it's a law which actually isn't recognized, meaning that Rov HaOlam doesn't recognize it as a moral problem, and they ignore the legal problem, so what is the status of Din Al-Husa on a Din which is not Nishmar? Right, that's a question which I don't want to get into, because that's a highly contentious issue, and it's not my issue to try to figure it out, but you see where the problem is, right? Is if you, right, on both levels, right, if you base your recognition of intellectual property on the moral argument behind the law, so then it might be undermined if people don't keep the law, right, en masse. Right, because that means Rov HaOlam doesn't recognize it. It might not be, because you could say they're just weak, right? A lot of people cheat on their taxes, and no one thinks it's legitimate, or something like that, right? And that's clearly Din HaMalchusa. Similarly, with Din HaMalchusa, you have to ask, and this is a difficult question, right? At what point is it just a joke? It's a law in the books that nobody keeps, and what's the legal status of that? That's obviously both of those will be right. Both of these questions will be affected by the reality on the ground, right? But I don't want to get into the shayla. I definitely don't want to get into the shayla on record. Well, that's not true. On record, I'll say it's very obviously usser to download music illegally.
But
right?
Uploading it from places that are even legal, like in Switzerland, it's legal.
It's usser. It's usser. Why it's usser, I don't know why it's usser, but it's usser. Right? Why it's usser, I really don't know, and I'm not going to go into the discussions. What?
You're the Shalom Nation. We're not sure why it's usser.
Is that why
the
usser?
Shalom Nation, then it's usser, but according to the Beit Yitzchak and the Igra Moshe, it's probably mutter.
Maybe. No. It's usser. Okay? No, I mean, I think it is usser. Why it's usser is a good question. So, on that note, to move to Revush advice. Yesterday we all had the schos gadol to hear Rav Hagoyin Rav Asher Weiss. I made a bracha when he walked in b'shem u'malchus, shechach mechach maso l'reyav. I love Rav Asher. I really do, from the depth of my heart. When he was in America a few years ago, Ora and I went to the Five Towns for Shabbos in order to hear him. And on Shabbos he gave a share on copyright law, and he suggested something different. So he raised the following. I gave you a summary. He said, first of all, he thinks it is Gezel, because it's real, right? You made it, and it's real. And his example was the example I gave you. He said, who in the right mind would deny that what Steve Jobs created is less real and less stealable and worth less money than a table? Nobody. Svara pshuta is that you created it and it's worth money and it exists. Right? The assumption of saying that halacha doesn't recognize intellectual property is, oh, intellectual property doesn't really exist. He said, who are you kidding? Right? Forget, without even saying, oh, secular law recognizes it. Forget secular law. It's real, it's worth money, everybody knows it. That was one. Two, he said, there's a category called minaga sochrim, which means that, forget Din and Malchusa, like, you know, broadly speaking, there's a halakhic category called minag ha-sochrim, which is
the market.
You are bound by the minag of the market. That is the convention you enter into. That is legally and halakhically binding. And he said, intellectual property is recognized by the market. It just is. Forget the law. It's recognized by the economy. That is how we run the economy, by recognizing people's rights to intellectual property. If that's the case, it is binding on our mega sochrim. And then, in a moment of absolute brilliance, he pointed to the following midrash, which appears in different places. The midrash says, what was the sin in different places of either the Dor HaMabul or stone? How much time do we have? 5 minutes?
Three.
Five. Right? It's time to destroy the world. Why? And why? Right? Why did God decide to destroy the world? Because the world was filled with Hamas. Ezu Hamas v'ezu Gezel. what is theft and what is chamas. Amar Reb Chanina, chamas eino sheve pruta. Chamas is theft of that which is less than a pruta. V'gezel sheshava pruta. V'kach hayu anshei hamabul osim. Haya echad mehem motzi kupatom le'a turm osim. V'haya zeba v'notel palchum yishav pruta v'zeba v'notel palchum yishav pruta. Ad makom sheino yachol otzio mimenu badin. So each person would steal less than a shavar pruta so they couldn't be prosecuted. And Mimela, what would happen? He would lose all his money because everyone justified that what I'm doing is not really stealing. I'm like, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Atem Asisem Shal Keshura, Afani Esei Machem Shal Keshura. And what Rav Asher argued, and I think very compellingly, is that Chazal had a category for this. It's called Hamas. Hamas means I do something which may not be considered a Maisig Zela, but in the aggregate, it will destroy somebody else financially. That is Usur Me'ikr Hadin. That's what Chazal called Hamas. And not recognizing intellectual property is Hamas. Because that's exactly what it is. Right? You can say it's not Zela, you can say it doesn't exist, but if nobody recognizes intellectual property, you destroy the inventor. And if that's the case, it's Usur Me'ikr Hadin. Right? So, we have a problem in front of us. Intellectual property didn't exist before, whenever, people didn't know what to do with it. So what do? The world recognizes it. What does halacha do? So you got a few options. Either you take the fact the world recognizes it as a siman that we should recognize it. And that is Sholem Asia. That is Rav Moshe. What category it is? Unclear. It's something. He doesn't think it's formal gzela, but it's something. Once it's recognized as something you have monetary rights, so maybe it's a tzagas gvul. That's the suggestion of the Sholem Aishiv. Beis Yitzchak, no. He has the opposite approach. Just because something is recognized by secular law doesn't mean we have to. We apply halachic principles. I don't have halachic principle for it, so I don't care what the world does on a fundamental level. Practically, I do, because we're bound by Din Malchusa. We do have to take into account secular law, but we don't allow secular law to define the halacha internally. We allow it to affect what we do, but we don't allow it to affect the Torah itself. Unlike the Sholem Aishiv. And Rav Asher takes a different view, right, which is similar to Sholem Aishiv, but I think it goes farther. And he says, no. First of all of monetary law is sociological. It's recognized, it's minhag ha-sochrim. And it's recognized. If it's recognized, you're violating it. You want to call it gzela, you want to call it a violation of minhag ha-sochrim, call it whatever you want. Second of all, svara pshuta. Look at the world, see how we recognize things. Everyone understands it's stealing. You want to call it not stealing, you don't have a halachic category, fine, but that's obviously a farce, right? I don't know if that actually makes it daily. He suggested maybe it does, but who knows? And his third shot, which I think is brilliant, is that Chazal, you look back for precedent, and you say, Chazal, they didn't have a notion of intellectual property, but they did have an idea that there could be something which is not formally Zela, which has destroyed somebody financially, and that's Hamas. And he said, for that reason, right, you look back, you found the precedent, and therefore it's us or Mikra Adin. So, a few different ways of trying to deal with a new sociological reality, and...